Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But we are in the midst of serious college football season. And this time of year has always been tough, you know, between, okay, we got to pay attention to the NFL, you got to pay attention to college, you got the NBA cranking, and all that stuff. But college has just decided that we are going to do everything in a two-week stretch. And I've never understood it for the life of me. And when I have one of those questions that I don't understand, there is one text that I send and one man who, for some reason, I still can't figure out, will get back to me and say, yes, Dan, I want to answer these questions with you. And that is Doug LeMaurice. You can watch him on Kings of the North. You can catch him on YouTube for that one. Monday through Thursday at noon, you can see that. There's a post-game Saturday episode after the day as well. Doug, how are you, my friend? It's been a minute.
I'm doing well. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you and the family as well, man.
Thank you.
So let's start on the college football side of things that are happening on the field, and then I want to work my way off the field with you on all of this stuff. So Kings of the North, you've been saying forever with me that this college football thing is going to turn into the North versus the South, and this is how all of this is going to end up being. And the way that the Big Ten and the SEC have gone, you're pretty much right. If you got lotto numbers, I'd love to get those as well from you. But the way that this is going is it seems like the Ohio State Buckeyes have found their stride. And it seems like this offense finally is starting to look like the offense that we all thought was going to be there. What happened against Tennessee that made this click?
They got guys on the perimeter. They realize they need to win the game with their best players, which is their receivers and their running backs out in space. They can't let it come down to the fact they have some injuries on the offensive line, and if they can't block a defensive tackle, that means they can't move the ball. So it was, you know, the Michigan thing, I still do think they have a mental block with that. And so that was part of it. But they also figured out some football stuff against Michigan that we just need to get the ball outside. And so they remembered who they were, which is who they were the whole time. They just forgot about it, I think, for a week, last weekend in November.
It made me laugh watching that Michigan game, Doug, for that reason, because it felt like Ohio State in that game decided, oh, you think you can block and tackle us to hell? Well, watch us try to block and tackle you to hell. And they like kind of forgot that, like, hey, we've got, you know, Jeremiah Smith on the outside of Emeka Buka, and maybe that's not our best way to go about this, but boy, we can outrun you and outskill position you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first play against Tennessee, right, was like a little throw outside to Emeka Buka. They hit a throw to Trevion Henderson that first drive, and then they ended it with a deep shot to Jeremiah Smith. Now, the other thing is Michigan had a very good defensive plan to try to take Jeremiah Smith away and bracket him, and Tennessee was more willing to leave him on an island. So it's not going to be that easy against Oregon. Oregon will have a better defensive plan than Tennessee did, but you've got to – the thing we talked about was Ohio State let the Michigan game be played on Michigan's terms, and why would Ohio State let that happen? And then they made – the Tennessee game be played on Ohio State's terms. And so as they move forward to Oregon. They put up a bunch of points on Oregon the first time. They just couldn't stop Oregon on the other side. But I do expect that we will see the offensive version of Ohio State that's them at least trying to dictate as opposed to letting the defense dictate to them.
It's a really good point, Doc. That's a really good point. You're right. They definitely decided we are playing Ohio State football game. That's a good point. Doug LaMaurice joining us. Kings of the North is the show that you can watch on YouTube. You catch the podcast as well along the way as it gets you ready for bowl season in between. All right, let's take a half step back from that one. Do we like the idea that they're taking the four big bowls and they're using them inside of the college football playoff?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I thought the first round was a success in having these giant home games and giant stadiums in front of passionate fan bases. Maybe the games weren't as tight as people wanted them to be. But I think those campus games showed us a new side of college football. There are people who said, if that's so good, why aren't we doing that again? Why isn't this round? Imagine if these games were at Oregon and at Georgia, right? Like Notre Dame's going to Georgia for that game. So I'd be in favor of that as well, but this Oregon-Ohio State game is going to be in the Rose Bowl. You know, it's going to be maybe the best game of the playoff, and it's going to be on that January 1 traditional setting. So if it's going to be a neutral site, if we're not going to have them be home games, and maybe they should be home games, but if it's not going to be home games, then have them be bowl stuff. I don't think have them randomly be, you know, in whatever, Orlando and Indianapolis, and, you know, I don't know. So I'm okay with it, but also it feels like the bowl system has been screwing up college football to some degree for the past 20 years, so I'd be okay without it. Do you like it? Do you like that these are bowls?
Buddy, I want these to be the same thing because I think it's not fair that, yes, you got the week off if you're Oregon, Arizona State, Boise State, Georgia. You got the week off, and yeah, that's a benefit, but boy, would it not be awesome to see one of these games on the Smurf Turf in Boise with that place going nuts and the snow falling, or Eugene be absolutely packed with Oregon fans and Ohio State fans doing what Tennessee did to Ohio State fans. Like, that to me feels way more like college football and the way that this playoff needs to be than saying, like, okay, we're going to take this and then we'll put it in the Sugar Bowl. I say this too. I love the Rose Bowl, Doug. Like, I have many memories sitting there watching the Parade of Roses with my mom and then, you know, making my way to the game later on in the day. And, you know, it was like the one time that my mom paid attention to something that was involving football was the Rose Bowl parade. Yeah. So, like, you know, I've got that memory that kind of coincides with it, but it just feels like after the success of these games and how loud those stadiums were and how packed they were, why can't we have that for the seeds that got the bye as well? Like, that's what always popped in my head, man.
I'd buy that. And I think we can see, I mean, they're going to tweak this. I even think by next year, we will not have the four best conference champs be guaranteed the top four seeds and the four byes. I think that's going to change. I think we're going to get to 14 instead of 12 probably sooner than later. So this is going to be adjusted in real time, and that would be one of the components too. You know, the TV networks are going to have to decide, do they think that's a better product? Do they want to be at the home site instead of at the bowls? But they've got to be able to kick the bowls to the curb when they need to, because they can't let that group still run this sport. But I don't think this is terrible. I don't think we're in a spot right now where people are like, oh, man, I can't believe they're going to play Notre Dame, Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. That stinks. It's like, actually, I think it'll be good. But I think maybe it could be better.
I do, too. And it feels like the first time in a long time that college athletics is not letting great be the enemy of good. It feels like college athletics for the first time went, this is something, this is good. I know we can improve it. We all know we can make it great, but, like, this is good. And we're willing to work with good for the time being. And that's the part of it that makes me really happy. Now, the part of it that I think they got to change, and I wanted to throw this out to you and watch your head spin. I think we need to get rid of the winter transfer portal, and I think we need to make all of it the spring. I think we need to have these guys lock in for a full year, because right now what's happening is something that could be so exciting for your sport and something that your fan base wants to dig their teeth into and really get into is happening at the same time that you're playing all of your bowl games, your championship games, and all of that in between, and you got the coaching carousel mostly done because of the transfer portal and the way it's going. I wonder, Doug, if we need to tell these players, that you are to transfer out and hit the portal in May, and you are to lock in for the full year. And the reason that I think that is, A, you can spread it out. You'll get more TV money out of it because you'll be talking college football all over the place, and you can get all of that excitement that comes with it. And if you're a coach and you can't get your team prepared for a game in 4 months, dude, that's a you problem. Like, that. At least I continue to look at this, and it's like, if you can't get it together in 4 months, that's on you. You should be able to coach a game plan with these guys. What do you think of moving the portal to May?
So everybody wants the players in for spring football, right? So they want, that's why they want them to move now. So, and it's hard if you know that you're going to leave your team, but your team's having spring football practice in March. Are you but you don't want to be rusty. So I agree with you. They've got to switch this. Like you were saying, it's like if the NFL had the draft, free agency, and the playoffs all at the same time. It's insane. They do have academic calendars to try to work around. I've seen people suggest maybe what you need to do is sort of get rid of spring football and make it summer football, or do something that you reduce the impetus to get those guys to their teams by January, because that's when classes start. And if you're not enrolled in classes, you can't take part in spring football. So, this is crazy. And to have players, for instance, Bo Prabula, the backup quarterback at Penn State, left the team because he felt like, I need to go find my new team in the portal, and I can't prepare for a playoff game while I'm doing that. Like, that's crazy to be losing guys off your roster at the most important time of the year. It's the academics, man. It's these classes. If only guys didn't have to go to class, we could figure this out.
Well, and that's my whole thing with May, is at least if you go late May, you should be done with finals by late May.
Yeah.
In which case, and even if you did it over Memorial Day weekend, you know, open the portal on the Friday of Memorial Day weekend and just dominate that whole weekend, I think you're then onto something. Because what happens every year on top of it is we get to August, maybe even July, and everybody basically has to go, wait, who hopped in the portal? Who's still here?
Yeah.
Because we're just in the middle of this whirlwind. It's almost like exactly what took place all of a day ago, which is you go through this 72-hour whirlwind of presents and food and all that stuff, and then you get done and you end up looking at each other and going, wait, what did I get for Christmas? What happened here? Like, I feel like that's what we're in the middle
of. Did I get a left tackle for Christmas?
Wait, exactly.
Somebody came in and stole my backup receiver. So, It needs to be better than this. It's just odd that we went from players having no rights in college football to it feels like you have to be able to leave your team at any moment and get any amount of money you want from anybody at any time, right? It's constant free agency as opposed to you can't transfer without sitting out a year. So it was too far one way. This is better, but it's too far the other way. But you can't figure this stuff out if you don't collectively bargain with the players, and they don't want to do that. So, like, if you could sit down and say, we're going to make a schedule, you give us this, we give you that, I think there's a solution out there, but then that gets toward employee status, and then the NCAA and the athletic departments don't want that. So, in the meantime, we're here. But the thing that I've always felt is the NCAA has dragged its feet through all of this, but maybe the chaos is what gets us to a solution. Because they don't want to be proactive, but it's like, well, this is nuts. We have to make it better than this. Okay, how do we do that? So it will eventually be better, but it is crazy to be setting your rosters for next year in the midst of the most important part of the schedule.
Doug LaMaurice joining us. Kings of the North is the show you can watch on YouTube Monday through Thursday. They do a post game on Saturday, React as well. It's a great watch. They also have it on podcast form as well. Love talking to Doug about all of this stuff. All right, I'm going to switch slight gears with you, but it's still going to be NIL. What did you make of Jim Larrañaga stepping down yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, these million-dollar coaches, like, you can cry me a river, tiny violins. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry that you're not totally in charge of everything the way you were 50 years ago. And the other thing is, if you are a head coach who is knee-deep in NIL negotiations constantly with agents and that kind of thing, like, you need help in your department. You need a director of operations who's helping you with that stuff. So it shouldn't be that a 70-year-old coach is the guy who's making every NIL deal. So, like, that's a failure by Miami if he felt like he got burned out by that. But, I mean, I'm this whole generation, like, they had it great for a long time. And by the way, maybe figure it out before the year. When did you figure it out? When we were Christmas shopping? Wait, I'm burned out. I can't do this anymore. Like, if a player quit in the middle of the year like that, we'd go nuts. So, like, you can miss me with all this stuff. I think it's stupid. And I'm sorry, coaches, that you are not millionaire dictators anymore. Get over yourself. This is the new world.
I could just see poor Jim Larranaga walking through, like, the toy aisle or something like that and seeing the miniature Fisher-Price basketball hoop and going, I can't do it. I'm done.
I can't.
This is too much.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you made a million-dollar life out of coaching a game, but now it's too stressful for you. Like, whatever, bro.
You're right, man. And it's the same thing that happens every time Saban puts a microphone in front of him and he just starts complaining about this. It's like, guys, I understand. You're heartbroken. You're not kings anymore. You now have checks on your power. This is the new reality of the world that you are living in. You have checks on your power. And it's going to be for the better of the game in the long term. And for teams like Miami that use the transfer portal to build that team and use NIL to build that team.
Right.
Because it spread everything out to where Miami could have this basketball program. Like, it kind of feels like you're biting the hand that feeds you.
He was not a victim of NIL. He used NIL to make the Final Four. And then was mad afterward when guys wanted to get paid. So, like, it just, stuff changes. But also the idea that, like, well, I guess that's it. I guess college basketball's dead because Jim Larranaga is not going to coach it anymore. It's like, we'll be fine. I mean, everybody went nuts when Jay Wright quit. It was like, guess what? We still have college basketball, right? So if it's not for you, there will be somebody else who will happily take millions of dollars to coach your team.
We made it through Dean Smith. We made it through John Thompson. We made it through John Wooten.
Yeah.
We found a way. It took a little bit to get over it, but we found a way in all of this. Doug, you're the man. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate you doing this. It's good catching up with you.
Always fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Doug. It's such a good listen. I love talking to Doug because Doug always makes me think, and he's got great perspective on everything. So that on Jim Larranaga, who decided yesterday that he was done. He was done coaching college football. And he couldn't handle it anymore, and he couldn't handle all the NIL and all of that stuff that came with it. And he's just the latest coach that we have seen in all of the college athletics who are basically throwing their hands up in the air right now and saying, I can't do this. I can't handle this name, image, and likeness life. I can't handle the transfer portal. I can't handle all of this stuff. And all it sounds like to me when I hear this is a mix of whining and a mix of people who are so used to being the kings of the castle and are so used to having all the power and are so used to be able to hold these kids in their hands and crush them like nothing and could bury them on a bench and could say, no, I don't play freshman. I will recruit them, but I don't play freshman. I will play my upperclass. You have to earn your way in. All of these old college basketball kings, essentially, are now living in a world where for the first time ever, their power is checked. There are checks and balances. And you're hearing all of these people used to having this power now have their power checked. Where all of a sudden, all the promises that were made in a living room by a coach, by a coordinator, by whatever, and they don't come true, now all of a sudden the kids can go, you lied to me in front of my face, and you lied to me in front of my parents. I'm out of here. Take care of yourself. And I don't need to find the anti-dialysis anymore. And I don't need to find all of the different ways in the past that we used to get out of this. I could just leave. I could just get out. Because I don't trust you because you lied to me and you don't have my best interests in mind. You have your best interests in mind. And we have now turned this thought process into where it should have been for a long period of time. And especially in the basketball sense. I mean, good God, what was it? Krzyzewski, I think it was, forever refused to play freshman. I think Boeheim might have been in there as well until he started getting like Carmelo Anthony and those kind of guys along the way. But these coaches refused to play these freshmen. And then they had to adapt to the one-and-done rule. And they all whined and they all complained. And Krzyzewski, I'll never forget Krzyzewski being the one going, I'm not going to play this game. We're going to play juniors. We're going to play seniors. We're going to do all of this stuff. And then here comes Kyrie Irving. And then here comes Zion Williamson. And they basically throw their temper tantrum. And then all of a sudden are like, oh, well, all right, I guess I have to adapt. I guess if we're going to get the talent, this is how we got to do it. And I threw my temper tantrum and it didn't get me anywhere, so we got to adapt now. And I think what we're in the middle of right now is exactly what Doug laid out there, which is an old generation that was used to having a boatload of power, throw their temper tantrum, and a chunk of them are just going to retire. And a chunk of them are just going to get out of it because they're so used to this unchecked power life that they were living, where they had to answer to no one. I'll never forget when I was told that Alabama, and I've never been down to Tuscaloosa, but I was told Alabama, for every coach that wins a national title, they build a statue of them. And that every day Nick Saban would walk by a statue of himself to get to his office. If having a statue of yourself isn't unchecked power and the feeling of being a king, I give up. I give up, because that would make me operate the same exact way Saban has been operating since he hung it up and decided to go to ESPN. But dude, I was a king. I had everything. We were winning. It was great. And now it changed. And I don't like it. And our social media mentions, powered by Scheiben Jeweler, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. You can send me a message at the SportsFeller on the artist formerly known as Twitter if you so desire. If it's easier to send it at Talking Heads, we can make that work too. But Bob brings up a good point. He goes, I'm 5 years younger than Larrañaga. All generations go through this. Woody Hayes would complain the world is changing for the worse, and so will you at 70. Just keep that in mind. Bob, I do. I have that in mind. I have told many people in my life on a lot of different things that you need to keep me in check. Because if I start turning into everything that I despise, then I need to be kept in check, and I will not like the man that I become. Because you're 100% right. And we all watch it with people that we care about. You know, you hit a certain point in life, and you can even see it in parents as they get older, grandparents as they get older. They kind of half follow the fashion trends and follow the fashion trends, and then they just hit a certain point, and they're just like, forget it, this is what I'm wearing. Like, I don't care if it's not fashionable, it'll come back around. I'm wearing what I like, and I'm doing what I like, and this is how I'm going to operate because it's gotten me this far in life. And I get that. And I understand it from that regard. But it will just continue to make me laugh how all of these guys and all of these college coaches that you're seeing all over the place with the portal and everything else are losing it. And James Larrañaga is just the latest one of it. And he spoke yesterday at his press conference, retirement press conference. He was the former basketball coach now of Miami basketball, made the Final Four just a little bit ago, had this to say at his retirement press conference.
At this point, after 53 years, I just didn't feel like I could successfully navigate this whole new world that I was dealing with, because my conversations were ridiculous with an agent saying to me, well, you can get involved if you're willing to go to $1,000,001. What? $1 million? And that be the norm? That was the norm. Like, you're talking to people that expect $1 million for playing college basketball. So for those guys, and God bless them, that can handle that, that can work through it, that the schools that can figure out a way to either put so much money to it or figure out a way that you can live with less. But I talk to a lot of my friends, and they're having all the same problems I'm having. How long they will last, it's anybody's guess.
I mean, to quote the great philosopher Dylan, the times they are a-changing, my friend. I mean, that's where we are. Like, this is the new norm, and frankly, this is what it should have been for a long time. And to hear a coach who, A, according to my quick Googling, made $2.5 million last year, complain about people asking for $1,000,001 to play for him is funny. And B, a guy who used the transfer portal to build a team that made the Final Four is funny. It's why you're seeing all these guys go out and hire these GMs. It's why you're seeing these coaches go do this model, and you're seeing Andrew Luck come back to Stanford to be the GM there, and you're seeing Michael Lombardi at North Carolina, and you're going to see more and more of this stuff along the way. And it's just to be like, you know, the middle guy so that we're not having these conversations in that way. And I love how Doug put it. Inside of the chaos, inside of this chaos is going to come a solution. And maybe that is the best way to go about it. Maybe that's the best way to look at it. But to hear Jim Larrañaga in that press conference go, I can't do this anymore. It's like, how were you able to do it 2 years ago? Like, what? You got over it then. Why can't you do it now? I don't know. The whole thing is, it just feels like a lot of people who are so used to being in charge now are no longer in charge, and they're having a hard time understanding it. Kevin in Cuyahoga Falls, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course, man. A very happy holidays to you and the family.
And to you, and a happy new year as well.
You too.
Yeah, I agree with you. NIL and the portal both have changed all of NCAA sports, football, basketball, you name it. I mean, across the board. It's painted with a huge brush. And I do agree with you that the old-timey coaches who were used to, you know, going to recruits' house, sitting down and say, hey, I represent, you know, insert university, and that was good enough. Those days are way gone, right? Now you sit down and the kid's going to say, how much are you going to pay me? And some of these old coaches aren't used to that, right? And mm-hmm. The other thing that's changed immensely, I mean, because of the portal is, you know, the old days of, and you know, you could think back up, you know, 9, 10, or more years ago, right? You could stash some kid, some A-plus recruit on, say, listen, kid, you'll get your turn later, but you're going to sit here for a year or whatever behind this guy because it's his turn now. Those days are way gone. Those days have sailed past. You know, these kids now know all it is I want playing time because, you know, the either NBA or NFL, whoever it is, they're watching all the games anymore, right? The ability for a scout at the pro level to see basically every kid at every level is there. They can stream every game they want. So it really doesn't matter, you know, the marquee name, although there's still some out there, certainly I think have some weight. But literally, kids are looking for playing time. You know, I want those minutes because I want to show what I can do on the field. So really, it's come down to NIL and playing time. And if kids aren't getting what they want, they're moving and hopping. I mean, look at what Nick Saban did. He threw up his hands in the air when basically Jimbo Fisher said, hey, I got that guy from you because I outbid you.
Mm-hmm.
Sucks if you don't like it, but that's how it works.
Right.
And Saban said, I can't do it anymore because, you know, I can't compete with it. So any university, if that coach isn't integrated right now with his NIL team, I think that they're just going to get left way behind, and you're going to see those programs become basically meaningless if they don't integrate with their NIL teams, because that's what the world is we're living in now.
100%, Kevin. I appreciate the call, man. Thank you. And he's right. It's free market capitalism. It's really where we are in college athletics right now. It's full-blown free market capitalism. Everything else operates this way. Why not we hit this point too? These kids are independent contractors. They're looking at what's best for them and what's best for their family. 216-474-0092 at the Sports Feller on Twitter if you want to get a hold of me through this whole thing. We'll get into a little Cavs thoughts after this. I've been dying to talk some Cavs. I've been dying to talk a little hoops. Our buddy Brian Anderson will join us at noon. Kevin Stefanski, 1:30 today. Dan Menigan in for Baskin and Phelps, 92 through the Fan. Dan Menigan in for Andy Baskin and Jeff Phelps, 92 through the Fans, which you got it locked into. I am here until 2 o'clock, and then Jonathan Peterlin, Nick Wilson will take you from there all the way home from your, hopefully, your last day of work for a little bit. Or if you're on vacation right now, good on you. You played your cards right, and I'm proud of you. And you probably should be proud of yourself, too, as you're sitting there listening to it. So 216-474-0092, the number to hop on with us. So we've had this joke for a while, and typically it's Jeff and I who will do this, and the two of us will sit there and giggle. And so it's going to be Jeff and I a little bit next week, and I'm sure we will have many a meeting. But right now, we are going to hold a meeting of the Evan Mobley Stockholders Club, right? Right now, Evan Mobley Stockholders meeting. There are refreshments along the backside there. Someone brought lemon squares. We've got coffee. We've got the whole kit and caboodle. We're living the high life. And let me tell you, stock is looking great in the Evan Mobley Stockholders meeting. We are in really good shape here. And when you talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers, I feel like that this season, the beginning of it is Evan Mobley. And I know a lot of people are going to point to Donovan Mitchell, and a lot of people are going to point to Kenny Atkinson, and a lot of people are going to spread all the praise all the way around. And agreed, praise goes all the way around. But the jump that Evan Mobley made in the playoffs last year against Boston seemed to have unlocked something in that guy. And he, mixed with what Kenny Atkinson wants to do, has become a completely different animal this season, especially on the offensive end. averaging 18.5 points a game, right? You'd love to see it hit 20, but hey, it's working, and it's working in the flow of an offense. And he's doing it with only getting one more shot a game. Went from 11.1 to 12.6, so 1.5 shots per game, right? So you're seeing the amount of field goal attempts maintain about the same, but the quality of those looks are getting better. And the decision-making that he has is getting better. He's getting to the line one more time more than he used to. I'd like to see the free throw attempts even get a little bit higher than the 4.1 he's at right now, because that means he's pushing the rim a little bit more. But I love, 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 love the way that he, A, has added some muscle, has been able to hang with guys a little bit better than he did last year, B, worked on his ball handling, and C, Kenny Atkinson recognizing how Evan Mobley was always a bit of an underrated passer, and how his ball handling has improved. And is now starting to funnel the offense a little bit more through Evan Mobley. And not in the old school way of funneling an offense through a guy where you put him on the block and you know, the old Tim Duncan, you throw him a bounce pass on the block and let him go to work for a turnaround jumper or the elbow jumper or the dunk or even the dump off to the other big for the easy dunk and all that kind of stuff. Some of that is in there. But more the way that Kenny Atkinson came in and saw how Draymond Green was able to succeed with the Warriors and how he can gear a lot of that and retool some of that philosophy into how Evan Mobley operates. So now all of a sudden we are living in a world where Evan Mobley could be the primary ball handler on a couple possessions in a row, freeing Donovan Mitchell to go off of off-the-ball screens, freeing Darius Garland to go to off-the-ball screens to get better looks, whether it's, in the Darius Garland case, a little bit more stand-and-shoot looks, come off of pin-downs, all of that kind of stuff to get a wide-open look on the move, or in the Donovan Mitchell case, to get a back cut, to get him the ball and collapse the defense a little bit more and make one more pass, or to be able to succeed, you know, and be able to find his own shot along the way. This feels like the season where the Evan Mobley leap that we were all screaming for last year has finally taken place in year four. Now, again, we're 30 games in. This all can change at any given point. But it feels like we are now in the position that we all thought we would be in with Mobley from the beginning, which is that Evan Mobley is the second best player on this team. And maybe, just maybe, he could even find his way to first. It's going to be a little bit. Donovan Mitchell's still unbelievable. But right now, Evan Mobley stock, oh, we're high, baby. It's way high. Buying in is going to take you a lot. And those of us who are in on the ground floor are living the high life again. They got Steve Winwood blaring in the background. We got palm trees swaying. We are in a good place right now. And that's the way that this thing should be. And I think the biggest beneficiary to Evan Mobley stepping up and to Kenny Atkinson is actually Donovan Mitchell. In an interesting way, yes, his shots are down. But there was a great piece in The Athletic by Tony Jones, who covered Donovan Mitchell when he was with the Jazz. Now still covers the Jazz, but a little bit more of a national writer for The Athletic. And he did a great sit-down with Donovan Mitchell where he sat there and just chronicled a lot of what took place with the Jazz and how he is happy and at peace in Cleveland and how he knows that his shot attempts are down. And he's good with it. And it's basically, hey, whatever we can do to benefit the team is what I want to do. Whatever we can do that is best for what the Cleveland Cavaliers to win basketball games, that's what we're going to do. He talked in that piece about how he stepped up his perimeter defense on the other side because he wasn't having to carry the load as much on offense. That's the kind of stuff you want to hear. Because I heard forever that we can't live in a world with two, I believe is the man who stands right or sits right where I stand, I don't like living in a world with 2 6-foot guards. I don't like 2 6-foot guards. I don't like 2 6-foot ball dominant guards. I've heard that over and over and over again. And I looked at him and I said, yeah, sure. Of course, we would all love nothing more than if there was some way we could stretch those two out so that they were 6'7", but that's not the reality of the situation. They're two incredibly talented guards, though. And if they can D up and if they can put on some muscle and they can, for lack of better terminology, put their big boy pants on and go up against guys who've got them by 6 inches and hang, this team is in good shape. And that's what you saw. And it stood out to me more than anything else in that NBA Cup game against the Celtics, where you could tell Jason Tatum, in the last 4 minutes of that game, was switching Darius Garland onto him and going, oh, I'm going to put you in the torture rack and you're done. I'm going to send you into the post and I am going to eat you up because I got 6 inches on you. And that's before I stretch my arm out. And Darius Garland hung. Darius Garland went, you are not going to put me in the torture rack. I am going to kick this thing up. I am going to body you up. I am going to show you my strength. And I am going to make your life miserable as you attempt to get these shots. And they did it over and over again. And Garland hung. And when you've got Evan Mobley and you've got Jared Allen, two guys who in the back end of that defense can really help you to clean it up, two guys who are long, two guys who can use that arm, you know, that reach that they have to cover two different sides of it, can move the way that Jared Allen can move the way that Evan Mobley can, where you can switch 1 through 5 and you can do all those different things that you can do on the defensive end by having them there. If those two can hang and those two can make life miserable, it makes that playoff run that everybody is looking for the Cavaliers more sustainable and more likely. Because that was the weakness. A lot of people saw Darius Garland and they compared him to Damian Lillard. And of course, everybody looks at Lillard and you see the shots from wherever and you see the great dishes and the A-plus teammate and the great leader and all that stuff that Dame Lillard was when he was in Portland and now in Milwaukee. But there was the other side of Dame Lillard, which was that he was just a horrendous defender who wouldn't stand in front of anybody. Some of that due to the fact that he was having to carry all the load of scoring in Portland. And some of that also due to the fact that you just kind of didn't want to. You know, defense is effort. Defense is caring. Defense is not resting so that you're good to go on the offensive end. And you're seeing with how the minutes have been distributed. I mean, Kenny Atkinson's playing 10, 11 guys a game. It's insane what he's doing for the bench. You're seeing that they're spreading this out. Donovan Mitchell's playing the least amount of minutes of his career. And you're seeing how these guys are hanging. And you're seeing in that column how Donovan Mitchell was going, I don't have that weight of the shoulders of the offense on me, so now I'm able to lock in on the defensive side. I'm not here to trash J.B. Bickerstaff. I don't find that constructive. But what I see is that a coach came in here and saw the talent that was on this roster and went, how can I best utilize this? How do I get these two guards, who are a little on the undersized area, to best benefit? Well, what if we run them off the ball screens? What if we still have some of that high screen and roll game, but we do a little bit more than just have one pick and roll as everybody else spreads the floor? We have guys move off of pin down screens. We have sets. We have all of these different things that help these guys get open. We can run the offense through Evan Mobley if we need to. That's the stuff that this Cavaliers team has done this year that has blown me away more than anything else. It's the fact that Evan Mobley has made a leap. And credit to Evan Mobley for doing that. And credit for Evan Mobley for putting the work in. And credit for him for all of that. And credit to Kenny Atkinson for looking at the puzzle pieces that were put in front of him and saying, how do I build this into the puzzle? How do I make this thing whole? Where do I need to plug this in? And props to all 11 guys on that team for buying into what's happening. Because if you read everything that's taking place and you see the clips that are coming out inside of that locker room from the beat reporters, man, vibes are great. Life is good inside of that locker room. And I don't think that goes anywhere. I don't think that's going to change at all. And I think they're going to hit a rough spot at some point. They're going to hit a rough patch. Somebody's going to get banged up. Somebody's going to miss 10 games. It's the NBA. That's the way it goes. It's 82-game season. No matter how well you do to rest these guys, somebody's still going to roll an ankle one night. Somebody's still going to yank a hammy. Someone's still going to run into some kind of an issue like that of broken finger, hurt wrist, whatever you want to point to. It'll be interesting to see how they pivot with that. But I don't think the vibes inside of that room is going to change. I don't think the vibes inside of that locker room are going to be any different. Because this team seems poised to win. This team seems to want to play together. And frankly, this team seems happy. And as long as they continue to strive for that goal of a title, and that happiness remains, and these guys want to play together, the sky's the limit. Remember, though, the bench gets you to the playoffs. The starters and your stars get you through the playoffs. So keep that in the back of your mind as well. 216-474-0092 at the Sports Feller on Twitter. The best friend of the show, Brian Anderson. Next, Dan Menigan in for Baskin and Phelps, 92 The Fan.